You're listening to The Crime Collective.
This is a true crime podcast, so it will contain some confronting themes. Listener discretion is advised.
I'll tap it right there, now that I've made that adjustment.
Thank you.
We are ready to rock and roll whenever you are.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome to The Crime Collective. My name is Claire.
My name is Ben.
And we don't have Butch today.
Nor do we have a special guest. Once again, thank you very much to Tash Turner. What an episode.
That was incredible.
It was unreal.
Loved
just
it.
Just a deep, like, we've never had a deep dive like that.
Not like that, no.
No.
That's right.
Very different. I cannot wait to have it back.
Hell yes.
By the way, if you're interested in coming on and you live locally, because nothing we can do about anything interstate, just let us know if you got something you want to get off your chest, or if you want to write a story but you don't want to come on the show.
Yeah, or even if it's not a story, even if you work in a certain field connected with what we talk about, we would love to get some experts, experts, not just armchair experts like us.
I would love to have a psychologist listen to and interject. A police officer, doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
Just
lawyers.
One of these guys. Oh, lawyer. Mm. I've got a billion questions.
Ooh, keep writing
like
down.
A billion. All right. Well, it's my turn.
You're up.
It's the first time I've told a story in a while.
Well, yeah, I guess it has been a while. Oh, and I was going to say, first of all, before we kicked off, after I did the Blythe Star episode, I've been meaning to give you an update on this because I put it up on Facebook.
This is an update?
Well, okay. Not exactly an update, but an extra bit of information.
Yeah.
So okay. I put it up on Facebook and Dad commented and he basically retold the whole story. You know, how I mentioned he loves spoiler alert.
I saw a long thing on there and I got to say, I saw it and then went, oh, I'm not reading that.
I was like, don't tell the whole story. Like, listen to the podcast. But anyway, he did give me a bit of information which I didn't know.
Yeah.
So his uncle, my great uncle, was also a police officer.
Right.
And he was involved with rescuing those crew members.
Holy cow.
And I had no idea.
Wowzers.
So there you go. That was just a little update. Anyway, Benjen, over to you.
What did you say to me?
Benjen.
Let's put that on the no list.
Oh, okay. No, cross that one.
No, I actually don't mind Benjen. That's fine.
It's a Game of Thrones sort of reference.
Oh, is it? Who's Benjen?
Benjen Stark.
Oh, one of the younger, but the dark-headed, the...
Wasn't he like the uncle that went missing and then came back? And...
I don't remember.
Anyway.
Gee whiz.
Anyway, carry on.
I love Game of Thrones and I got to tell you, I even like the last few seasons. I don't care. They're not the same as the books. Shut up. I don't care.
I think they rushed it too much at the end.
Yeah, well, anyway. Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the story of John Wayne Glover.
John Wayne, another John Wayne.
Yes, another John Wayne.
But Glover.
Mm. All right. John Wayne Glover was born on the 26th of November in 1932 in Wolverhampton, England.
Oh, we're going to the UK today.
We are in the UK, but just briefly.
Oh, okay.
From a seemingly middle-class family, his parents separated when he was very young. I couldn't actually find the date when they separated. John stayed with his mother, but it ended up being a very complex, confusing time for him as John witnessed his mother having multiple relationships and multiple sexual partners with various men. And he even found pornographic photos of her, of his mum in the house.
Oh, that's
and this
awkward.
Was a very unhealthy place for a child.
Yeah.
No physical abuse or anything like that. Just a very unhealthy place for a kid to be when I'm going to just say it, when heaps of random dudes coming in and banging your mum.
Yeah.
And then leaving. It just...
That's not good.
It's really not great. Because of this, he turned to a life of petty crime. Before he was at the age of 13, he'd already been charged with stealing such items as clothes and handbags and so on. At 14, he left school and joined the British Army, where he lied about his age to enlist. after he joined the army, found out about his previous crimes and threw him out. This actually happened with...
Was that Edgar Cook?
Edgar Cook, yeah. Let's fast forward to 1957.
Okay.
All right. John Wayne Glover was 25 years old and he moved to Australia.
Oh.
Yeah. But it didn't take him long to start making trouble here.
Mm-hmm.
He first lived in Melbourne in 1957, where he was charged very quickly with two counts of larceny and a stealing charge in New South Wales. In 1962, he was convicted of two counts of assaulting women in Melbourne, two counts of indecent assault, and one count of assault occasioning actual bodily harm, and another four accounts of larceny. He was thieving and slapping women around and stuff.
Yeah.
He just doesn't like women. He was sentenced to a 3-year good behaviour bond. Retrospect. In 1968, so just over a decade, he met and married Gay Rolls. That's her name, Gay Rolls, and moved into a parents' house in Mossman in New South Wales, where they raised two children. John's biological mother moved to Australia in 1976, but 13 years later, in 1989, she died of breast cancer. Later that same year, John himself was diagnosed with male breast cancer.
Oh.
Still in 1989, he separated from his wife. While he stayed in Mossman, his wife took the two kids and moved to New Zealand.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah. It is important to note that at the time, this time, he was a sales rep for the 4-20 Meat Pie Company.
Oh, okay.
Okay. He was a volunteer at the Senior Society and was considered amongst his friends as a warm and trustworthy man. Now, get ready because it's about to get a bit sideways.
Not going to be so warm and trustworthy anymore?
No.
No.
On the 11th of January, 1989. 11th of January, 89.
Remember that?
84-year-old Margaret Todhunter was walking down Hale Road in Mossman, where she was seen by Glover, John Wayne Glover. After parking his car, he walked up to her. He punched her in the face and stole the contents of her purse, including $209. And Glover then went to the Mossman RSL Club. So that's the retired, here in Australia, that's the retired servicemen's league. It's the
RSL. It's RSL. The RSL, yeah.
Yeah, it's a club for veterans.
Yeah.
Where he spent Mrs. Todhunter's money. Investigating police concluded the crime was a mugging and held little hope of finding the perpetrator.
Yeah.
So he was never pinged for that one. On the 1st of March 1989, same year, as Glover left the Mossman RSL, again, in Military Road, he saw 82-year-old Gwendolyn Mitchell-Hill walking down the street. Glover returned to his car and put a hammer under his belt.
Oh.
Yeah. He followed Mitchell-Hill to the entry foyer of her Military Road apartment. As she went to open the front door, he hit her with a hammer on the back of the head. He then continued to strike her about the head and body. Several of her ribs were broken. Glover fled the scene, taking her purse containing $100. Mitchell Hill was still alive when the body was found by two schoolboys, but she died shortly after the police and ambulance arrived.
Oh.
82 years old. The police had no eyewitnesses or leads or nothing concrete linked to this attack with the previous attack on Margaret Todhunter. No forensic evidence was available, as well-intentioned neighbours believing she had merely fallen.
Ah.
Okay.
And they cleaned up the scene.
They'd washed the crime scene.
Yeah.
The neighbours thought she fell over and really hurt herself.
Yep.
And they cleaned all the blood up with hoses and stuff. The police assumed that it was another mugging gone wrong. Okay.
Okay.
On the 9th of May, 1989, Glover was walking along Military Road again when he saw 84-year-old Lady Ashton. Mm-hmm. Lady Ashton is the widow of Australian impressionist artist Sir John William Ashton.
Wow. Okay.
I looked it up. He did some art.
Some stuff. Yeah.
Walking towards him. She was on her way home to a nearby Raglan Street. Glover put on a pair of gloves and followed her into the foyer of her apartment, where he attacked her with his hammer. He then threw her on the ground and dragged her into a rubbish bin alcove, where he repeatedly hit her in the head, hit her head on the pavement. Glover recalled that she almost overpowered him until he fell on top of her and started to hit her head on the pavement.
Mm.
After she was knocked unconscious, John Glover removed her pantyhose and strangled her. He placed Lady Ashton's walking stick and shoes at her feet and then left with her purse containing $100. Mm. Glover headed for the Mossman RSL again, where he commented to staff that he hoped the sirens outside weren't because of another mugging.
Oh, my God.
What a sociopath.
That's so blatant too. Like,
yeah.
But, I mean, obviously they just thought he was this nice guy. And
yeah. Zero wow. fucks given.
And he knew the whole time it was because of him.
As Ms. Turner would say, that is a clear and void lack of empathy.
Hell yes.
Yeah. Police found Lady Ashton lying face down diagonally across the concrete floor of the small bin alcove. A pool of blood was around her head. The pantyhose was strung so tightly around her neck that they had to cut it off her skin.
Mm.
Yeah. Her bare legs were crossed and her arms were placed by her side. She had a thin trickle of blood running out of her mouth. At this point, the police concluded that they were facing a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
To date, all three victims were wealthy, elderly women from the same suburb, and were all assaulted or killed in the same manner before being robbed of their handbags.
Mm-mm.
A post-mortem examination was carried out and no sign of semen was found. The ligature marks around her neck were measured to be 9 centimetres. She had a bruise on her nose and her temple and her neck and both her eyelids.
Mm.
Mm. At some stage during the struggle, she bit her lips, causing damage to the inner lining of her mouth, and a wound on her cheek, which was an open cut and had a small semicircle abrasion, which was a few centimetres away from it,
mm-hmm.
end of the hammer.
Yeah.
The examiner noted the victim's diamond ring was still present, suggesting that she had not been killed for the money. Okay.
Well. Scroll.
Scroll. Here are some further offences. Same time period.
Mm-hmm.
June 6, 1989. Glover molested 77-year-old Marjorie Mosley. At the Wesley Garden Retirement Home in Belrose. The victim reported to the hospital staff and police that a man had put his hand under her nightgown, but that she couldn't remember what the man looked like.
Mm.
On June 24, 1989, Glover visited the Caroline Cheers Home. No, that's not right. Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Cheers Home Nursing Home in Lane Cove, where he lifted the dress of an elderly patient and fondled her buttocks. Mm. In a neighbouring room, he slid his hand down the front of another patient's nightdress and stroked her breasts.
Mm.
The woman cried out for help and Glover was briefly questioned by staff at the hospital before leaving.
Oh, just let him go?
Yep. 8th of August, 1989. Glover assaulted the elderly Eiffel Crane in a back street of Linfield on Sydney's Upper North.
Mm-hmm.
On the 6th of October, Glover pretended to be a doctor and ran his hands up the dress of Phyllis McNeil, a patient at the Wybina Nursing Home in Lower North Shore suburb of Neutral Bay. Glover left when the blind, McNeil called for help. At the same time, Glover was apparently never suspected or identified as being responsible for the molestations. Hmm. Right. On October 18th, 1989, Glover followed 86-year-old widow Doris Cox along Spit Road in Mossman to her retirement village. In the secluded stairwell at the front of the house, he attacked her, ramming her face into a brick wall where she fell. Although she survived the assault, she was not able to provide a clear description or recollection of the events, probably due to her dementia. According to her, the attacker was a young man, possibly a teenager or skateboarder.
Oh.
Cox assisted police with an identikit drawing, but again, the scene had been cleaned by neighbours before investigating arrivals.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah. On the 2nd of November, 1989, it's a, 1989 was the year, it's not stopped. Glover approached 78-year-old Lane Cove resident Dorothy. You're seeing a pattern here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dorothy Benick, or I may need Benicky? Clarification. Benicky?
B-E-N-N-E-K-E, is it?
Yeah. Hmm. How did you know that?
I've had a Benicky in one of my stories.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wowzers.
There you go.
Did I hear that already?
Probably, yeah. I can't remember which one it was.
I can't remember either. No. That's not to say I don't listen to your stories. I love them.
I should hope so.
Yeah. I just don't listen to them.
Well, I can't
I'm only joking. All right. Sorry, everyone. Dorothy Benicky, while she was walking home in a quiet back street just off Longville Road, Lane Cove, about 10 kilometres from Mossman. Glove then engaged her in conversation and offered to carry her groceries home for her. Benicky invited him inside her house for a cup of tea. Mm-hmm. Glover declined the tea, but on the return down the laneway to the main street, he passed another old woman and then assaulted her from behind. Mm-hmm. The victim this time was 85-year-old widow Margaret Pahud? P-A-H-U-D.
Oh, Pahud? I don't know, Pahud.
Pahud?
Pahud?
Sorry if this is triggering anyone.
Pahud.
I don't know.
Apologies for our pronunciations.
I don't know. Yeah. Margaret, I got right. P-A-H-U-D. Pahud.
Pahud.
Okay. Sorry about that. While she was on her way from grocery shopping. Mm. And the police were certain that this was the work of the granny killer.
Mm-hmm.
She was hit on the back of the head with a blunt instrument. And when she collapsed, he struck her again on the side of the head. Glover rearranged her clothes, shoes and walking stick, took a handbag and left. Again, nobody saw the attack, but within a few minutes, her body was found by a young schoolgirl who at first thought the body was a pile of clothing dumped in the laneway. Neighbours yet again washed down the crime scene as the police and ambulance were on their way. Glover rummaged through the contents of Pahud's purse on the ground of a nearby golf club. So picked up the purse and ran away.
Right.
He then headed off to the Mossman RSL to spend the $300 he'd stolen from her.
This guy.
Within 24 hours of the Pahud murder on the 3rd of November, 81-year-old Olive Cleveland became the fourth woman killed by the so-called granny killer because he's assaulted people and they've survived, but this is technically the fourth one.
Yeah.
Some of these may be out of order too, but I don't think they are. I looked at it really hard, but some of it, because I got my information, my sources were Wikipedia and another, there was two other books I read. I can't remember the sources, but we'll put them in the Discord.
You read the whole books? That's great.
Yeah. Well, they were e-books.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's be honest, they were just articles. But they felt like a book.
Fair enough.
Yeah, right, okay. So, 81-year-old became the fourth victim to be killed by the so-called granny killer. Glover struck up a conversation with Cleveland while she was sitting on a bench just outside Wesley Garden Retirement Village, where she lived in the suburb of Belrose. When Cleveland became uncomfortable, she got up and proceeded to walk to the main building. Glover seized her from behind and forced her down on a ramp and in a secluded side lane, where he hit her repeatedly, pushed her head onto the concrete before he removed her pantyhose and tied it tightly around her neck. Once again, Glover rearranged her clothing, shoes, and walking stick, then left, taking $60 from her handbag. Once again, the old woman's injuries were initially attributed to a heavy fall, and the crime scene was yet again washed down. No eyewitnesses were found. Shortly afterwards, the state government put up the reward of $200,000. Mm. Yeah. On the 23rd of November, 1989.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Glover was sitting in the Buena Vista Hotel in Middlehead Road, Mossman, where he saw 93-year-old widow Muriel Falconer walking opposite the hotel, returning home from shopping. Glover returned to his car, parked opposite the police station, to retrieve his hammer and gloves. Mm. He followed Falconer to the exterior of a home in Muston Street. He quietly moved up behind her. She was partially deaf and blind. Oh. While she opened the front door, he put his hand around her mouth to silence her before repeatedly hitting her around the head and neck with his hammer. Mm. When she fell to the floor, Glover began to remove Falconer's pantyhose. As he did this, she began to regain consciousness and cried out for help. This prompted Glover to hit her multiple times with the hammer again until she finally passed out. He removed her underpants and used them to strangle her. He searched her purse and the rest of her house for valuables before leaving with $100. But again, after rearranging her shoes, the following afternoon, the body was discovered by a neighbor who entered using a spare key. The crime scene was left undisturbed and the investigators were able to collect forensic evidence, including bloody shoe prints. A neighbor described a suspect as middle-aged, portly, and gray-haired. Mm-hmm. The reward was increased to $250,000 by Christmas.
God, okay.
Right? On the 11th of January, 1990, Glover visited the Greenwich Hospital in River Road, Greenwich. Yep.
Yep.
On his 4-20 pie sales round. He was in his work uniform and carried a clipboard and entered a hospital, hospital's palliative care ward, which held four elderly ill women, including 82-year-old advanced cancer patient Daisy Roberts. Glover asked if she was losing any body heat. He then pulled up her nightgown and touched her in an indecent manner. Roberts panicked and called for help, upon which a nurse found Glover in the ward. When confronted, Glover ran from the ward and the nurse was able to record his car's registration and notified police.
Good.
Good. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital staff were able to identify and name Glover as he was known from doing his pie rounds. A week later, the police returned with a photograph of Glover, which both the nurse and Roberts positively identified. Although this was a significant breakthrough, the hospital assaults were not linked to the murders. Nor reported to the murder task force for 3 weeks.
Oh.
Because, of course, they put a task force, a big task force too. Detectives from Chatswood's police station contacted and confirmed Glover's name via his employer. Detective contacted Glover and requested that he attend for an interview at the station the following day. When Glover failed to appear, the police rang his home and were informed by his wife that he had attempted suicide by overdose and was recovering at the Royal North Shore Hospital.
Mm.
He knew
it was coming.
He tried to kill himself.
Mm.
Police went to the hospital to see Glover, but he declined to be interviewed, although he did permit them to take a photograph. Staff at the hospital handed police a suicide note that was written by Glover in the middle pages of a 4-20 pies business paper that contained the words, "No more grannies, ...grannies, and Essie." That's Glover's mother-in-law.
Oh.
And Essie started it.
Oh, okay. Right?
Complex relationships with older women.
Yeah, I could understand with his mother, but obviously the mother-in-law too was...
He just didn't like older women by the looks of it so far.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, the suicide note and photo were passed around the task force, now numbering some 70 members. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Whereupon detectives believed immediately that Glover was the killer. Although they had no evidence, the head detective task force said, if he had said to us, "I don't want to talk," and we couldn't prove a thing, still, the photo matched the description of the grey-haired suspect, and in his job as a pie salesman, Glover could have been at any murder scene. Okay. Glover was interviewed over the nursing home assaults and denied all accusations. Police had limited evidence and decided not to question him over the murders, which would have let Glover know that the police were suspicious of him for that. Because at this point, he's just getting questioned about the touching up the ladies in the hospital, nursing home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glover was put under constant police surveillance, including... at one stage with an automatic tracking device. To make sure that he was not being followed, Glover would drive around the block more than once or drive the wrong way up a one-way street. So he's acting this way because he's well aware that he's done heaps more stuff.
Yeah.
He still only thinks it's because of the inappropriate behaviour at the nursing home. On the 19th of March 1990, Glover... killed his sixth and final victim in Mossman. She was 60-year-old divorced Joan Sinclair from Beauty Point, with whom Glover had a platonic relationship. By this stage, police had Glover under constant surveillance and watched as Sinclair let Glover into her home at around 10 a.m. By 1 p.m., no sign of Glover. All movement within the house was seen. Police and the surveillance team became concerned at around 5 p.m. and got permission to enter the house by 6 p.m. Two uniformed police knocked on the front door, pretending to be checking on a barking dog in the neighborhood, to no answer. And when looking through the rear glass door, saw a hammer lying in a pool of dry blood on the mat.
Oh.
Four detectives searched the house and found Sinclair's battered head wrapped in a bundle of blood-soaked towels. She was naked from the waist down and her pantyhose were tied around her neck. Her genitals were damaged, but Glover later denied raping her. After finding Sinclair's body, they then searched the house for Glover, who was found unconscious in a filled bathtub.
Oh, right.
Right.
Mm, my God.
Glover later told police that he murdered Joan Sinclair and explained that he had been having a relationship for some time. He said that he beat her about the head with his hammer, removing her pantyhose and strangling her with it. Glover rolled the body in an old mat, wrapped the head in towels around her extensive head wounds to stem the flow of blood. Then he dragged the body across the room, leaving a blood trail. He then ran to the bath, swallowed a handful of Valium and drank a bottle of Vat 69. Slashed his left wrist and lay in the tub waiting to die. Okay, so he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Trial. He got charged with it, of course.
Good.
At the trial, commencing on the 28th of March, so that was very quick.
Yeah.
1990, Glover pleaded not guilty to his crimes on the grounds of diminished responsibility. A psychiatrist said Glover had built up hostility and aggression since his childhood against his mother and then against his mother-in-law, who said triggered him. When she died, he had to take out his aggression on someone else. The psychiatrist who studied the case also added that it was a very unusual case because very few serial killers exist and most of them are mentally ill and or have an organic disease of the brain. Glover was sane at the time of the murders, but the psychiatrist at the trial, John Shand, said Glover had a severe personality disorder.
Yes.
The Crown prosecutor maintained that Glover was well aware of his actions when he killed. He was also planning what to do with the victim's money and also took time to clean the hammer with acid. Glover was impotent and had no interest in sex. So tying the pantyhose so tightly around his victim's necks was a way to make sure they were dead. At the same time, trying to trick the police into thinking that this was the work of a sexually motivated killer.
Right.
Glover was addicted to poker machines, and the easiest way to get more money was to steal. After the guilty verdict was delivered, Justin Woods stated that he was dealing with an extremely dangerous prisoner. He was able to choose when to attack and when to stay his hand. He's cunning and able to cover his tracks. It is plain that he has chosen his moments carefully. Although the crimes have been opportunistic, he has not gone in where risk is overwhelming.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. The period since January 1989 has been one of the most intense and serious crime-involved extreme violence inflicted on elderly women, accompanied by the theft or robbery of property. On any view, the prisoner has shown himself to be an exceedingly dangerous person, and that the view was mirrored by the opinions of the psychiatrist who gave evidence at his trial. I have no alternative other than to impose the maximum sentence available, which means that the prisoner will be required to spend the remainder of his natural life in jail. It is inappropriate to impose any minimum term to be served before release on parole. Having regard to those life sentences, this is not a case where the prisoner may ever be released pursuant to any order in the court. He received 6 life sentences never to be released.
Brilliant.
Okay. So he can't even have parole.
Nope.
No. Glover was imprisoned at Lithgow Prison, where he's held in maximum security prison cell.
Is he still alive? He's still...
On May 2005, I'm not telling you shit, lady. On May 2005, Glover collapsed in his cell and was placed on suicide watch after telling a prison officer, "I've had enough. I want to kill myself." Mm. He was examined by a mental health review team and monitored by closed circuit television. He was also given medical examinations as a follow-up to the 2 cancer surgeries he'd undergone the year before. On the 10th of September, Glover was found dead in his Lithgow maximum security prison cell and pronounced at 1:25 p.m. he was found dead. The 72-year-old serial killer was confirmed to have hanged himself. Days before Glover killed himself, he handed his last outside visitor a sketch of a park. Glover pointed out 2 pine trees in the image. In the middle of the right pine tree, the number 9 could be seen between leaves and branches. The number 9 is said to either represent the total number of murders or the number of unsolved murders committed by Glover.
Ooh.
Yeah. Right?
So what, either there's an extra 3 or
9.
There's an extra 9. Yikes.
Unsolved murders. Okay. This is in the realm of time that he was there. These are some other unsolved murders that possibly have been committed by him.
Oh. Wow.
Emmy Mae Anderson, 78, East Melbourne.
Melbourne.
He was there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yep. Irene Kittle, 61, St Kilda, Victoria, 22nd of March, 63. Izzy Boy, 63, Perran, Victoria, 3rd of June, 67.
Yeah.
Christina Yankos, 63, Albert Park. Florence Broadhurst in Paddington, New South Wales,
Florence
in
1978.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Josephine McDonald, 72, New South Wales, in 84. And Wanda Osmendmond in 1983. She was 83, sorry, and this was in 1986 in New South Wales. These are all the places he was that elderly women were murdered.
And the thing is, I guess, like with the people that were cleaning up the scene, they didn't suspect that it was murder.
Nope.
So, yeah, there could have been so many others that people just thought, oh, she's fallen, she's hit her head. And it just got discounted.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
100%.
Yeah, and the Florence Broadhurst one, I only know that because she was quite famous. I think was she a wallpaper designer or she was an artist or something?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I can't remember. But, yeah, that was quite a famous one that was unsolved. So,
yeah, that's the story of John Wayne Glover.
John Wayne Glover.
The granny killer.
The granny killer, yeah.
Yeah, there you go, hey.
Oof. Thank you. That was
it's pretty intense.
Amazing, but yes, intense.
Yeah, like that's that stems from the Who Am I's.
Yeah,
I know they flow that way, and I'd love some feedback from people on how they feel about those stories when I tell them, because they all start off the same: young, childhood, and then what they did.
Yes,
there's no actual story because the ones I cover have killed multiple people. There's no way you can really do a story. Well, you probably can, but it wouldn't work out that way.
Yeah.
Not fascinating, but that's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Sure.
That he was just, I mean, a rep or a salesman that's, you're everywhere all the time.
Yes.
This is a part of it. That's how he was getting around unnoticed. The fact that there was the assaults and the murders at the same time. The police didn't put that one together.
So that's a bit that I didn't understand, because you were saying, like, when he was attacking the women and then tying their pantyhose around the neck to make the police think that was a rapist. Yeah, but then he was going into the hospitals and the nursing homes and touching the old ladies. It's like,
that's
what?
Right. Also, you add on top of that the good intention neighbours.
Yeah.
That were washing down the crime scene. But he was wearing gloves and.
Yeah, that's right. So when he was saying about trying to discount his actions, it's like, well, no, you were premeditated enough to have gloves and go and put your gloves on. So, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, yeah, sorry, not sorry.
No. Wow, well, thank you.
Well, there you go. It's just, a story of John Wayne Fuckface. I think that's his technical name.
That's what we'll call him from now on. Yes, another John Wayne Fuckface. There's a few out there.
Yeah.
Right, well, I've got some Tassie tales to top things off today.
Based me.
Well, I'll give you a warning. They're all a bit, they kind of follow a theme.
Okay.
And they're all a little bit saucy, but in a criminal kind of way. And I'm sure you would have heard of some of these, but I just had to recount them.
I'm ready.
Brace yourself.
Okay.
Right. And some of these are quite recent ones. Anyway, first up, it's a story from last year, and this one's a bit fishy. Sorry.
See, if that was a shit dad joke already.
It's particularly rank and disturbing and weird and gross. But
oh,
it is.
God, I know where we're going,
you know,
I think.
You know it.
My God. Okay, go.
Okay. On January 25, 2023, Tasmania Police issued a warning that anyone found possessing or distributing a viral video which involved the graphic use of a fish could face criminal charges.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, yep. The video in question showed a man and a woman on a boat with the man using a live trout to perform a sex act on the woman.
Yeah.
The couple's behaviour was widely condemned on social media, with many expressing disgust at their actions.
Yep.
You'd hope so. Police were also investigating another video that surfaced on social media showing the same couple engaging in sexual activity on a grave at St. Mark's Anglican Cemetery in Cressy.
Yeah.
And it belonged to a quite well-known artist, David Hammond Chapman.
Oh.
Mm. On February 1, it was reported that the pair behind the two vulgar videos had been charged by Tasmania police.
Yeah, true story.
Yeah. So the 57-year-old woman and 54-year-old man, they were both from the south of the state, and they were charged with bestiality offences and an offence relating to prohibited activities in a cemetery.
Oh.
And it was revealed that the woman had previously worked at a Hobart veterinarian clinic. And the man who filmed the video had been, which had been viewed by millions across the world by then, unfortunately, had previously been charged after a separate fishing-related offence.
Oh.
Yuck.
So I had been told about that
mm-hmm.
and someone tried to show me the video once and I have no interest in it, haven't seen it, can honestly look you in the eye and say I've not seen that.
Me either.
And when they told me, like they were laughing, but I'd heard the story already.
Mm-hmm.
And someone said something on the lines of, hey, would you go fishing with these two? And they went to pull up the video to show me and I went, stop, don't give a fuck, see you later.
Thank you.
No interest in that. That's,
no.
I wasn't on my moral high horse or anything, but I was like, no, I just don't want to see it.
Just rank and no,
yeah,
don't go there. Yeah. But I just don't understand. Like, first of all, why would you do that? Why would you film it? And then why would you share it? Like,
right. Ugh. Right. There's so, there's, it's probably the sharing is the worst one.
Yeah.
Like, because
yeah,
it's
I mean, if
dumb.
You want to do your own kinky little things, we don't kink shame here. You can do that in, you know, in the safety of your own home, but you don't need to go and share it with other people. Like.
No. Nah. All right.
But don't use fish or animals
don't,
or anything,
don't
please.
Use any, no. Life, this is gross. I hate it.
Sorry, it's going to continue along
no,
this gross
no,
theme.
I'm ready. So. I'm ready. Let's do it.
The next tale involves a total wanker. 31-year-old Sean Patrick Mahoney. He went on a spree of public masturbation across Hobart between March and September in 2020.
That's a big run.
Yeah. So the Mercury reported that his spate of obscenity began on March 28 in the Moona Dental Centre toilets. Where, sorry, I'm getting notifications on my computer, which is making noise.
Unbelievable.
Let me just close something down here to stop that happening.
This is the most unprofessional thing I've ever seen. And I've left my phone on twice.
Yeah, the phone.
Don't try and switch the subject here.
Just shifting the blame.
Yeah.
Okay. The Mercury reported that his spate of obscenity began on March 28 in the Moona Dental Centre toilets, where he left the door partially open while he was busy. On September 4, a woman saw him at it in the male public toilets in Wellington Court in Hobart.
Did he also leave the door open?
Yes, of course. A few days later, he struck again in the foyer of the Centrepoint Shopping Centre, where two unfortunate women were witnesses. But this is no laughing matter. Most disturbingly, later the same day, in front of a 13-year-old girl at the St. David's Park toilets.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. On September 10, he put on a disgusting display at Newtown Woolworths and later the same morning at St. Vincent de Paul in North Hobart.
Oh.
And unsurprisingly, Supreme Court Judge Helen Wood said Mahoney suffered mental health problems, including a lack of impulse control, reduced cognition and impaired memory. And he believed his troubles stemmed from head injuries suffered in a serious car accident and when he was the victim of a major assault.
Oh.
Yeah, anyway, he pleaded guilty to 9 counts of indecency and was jailed for 14 months.
Okay, you can't just jack it anywhere you like.
No. Disgusting. Anyway, my final twisted Tassie tale for today.
I'm ready.
Dates from June 2023, so another one from just last year, when The Advocate reported that rumours of a dead body being found near Smithton eventuated to be something much less sensational, but still somewhat salacious.
Okay.
A Tasmania police spokesperson confirmed that reports of a suspicious bag in bushland in Flowery Flat were investigated. It was rumoured that the investigation was in relation to the discovery of a dead body, but such grave fears were misplaced. The discovery was in fact a sex doll that had been discarded by its owner and discovered by a poor passerby.
Oh, dear.
And quote, as is our usual process, police take all reports seriously until proven otherwise. The police spokesperson said the bag was determined not to be suspicious. I don't know. It's all a bit sus to me.
Wow. Someone got rid of their sex doll and
had enough
just
and dumped
it. Where else are you going to tag it? Are you going to put it in the back of the ute and go to the tip?
Yes.
Where do I put this? Is it because it's kind of recyclable?
No, kind it's of, not.
Well, you can't put it on Marketplace.
Ugh. No way. Used.
You're saying you don't want to buy. You're saying you wouldn't buy secondhand sex toys.
That is absolutely what I'm saying. Oh,
that's beyond. Well, listen here, money bags. All right.
Only brand spanking new ones for me. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. But yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be dumping your rubbish anyway, but especially not a sex doll, please.
No. Well, I'm going to say this in his defense or hers. Well, hashtag on with her.
Either way.
What else are you going to fucking do with it?
I wrap it up really well and take it to the tip.
Right. Okay. How do you wrap up a sex doll and not make it look like a body?
Yeah, I know, but better at a dump than out in the public.
I know this is going to sound weird, but you'd probably chop it up.
Oh. I guess so.
Oh, I'm so sorry. This conversation is just fucking horrible.
It's not something I've put a lot of thought into.
No.
Thankfully.
Sorry. I don't want to have this conversation ever again, but I'll probably bring it up at some stage. How would you get rid of a sex doll?
How would you do it?
It was a blow-up one. You just flatten it and roll it out. Roll it up like a towel. I don't know, but not a... I wonder if it was like one of the realistic ones.
That's what I'm imagining. If they suspected that it was a dead body, it must have had to have looked like one of the real silicone kind of ones.
Oh, my God, I shouldn't laugh. That is too good. I have questions upon questions for this person. If you end up hearing this,
please write in.
Just say, what was your thought process?
What was going through your head?
How, you know, there was probably better ways to do it. We can workshop it. Just email us. If you do want to reach out at all, I shouldn't laugh. If you do want to reach out at all, it's just do it through Gmail. It's tcrimecollective@gmail.com. That's the letter T, crimecollective@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Feel free to join the Facebook group. As Seabiscuits informed me, we have Instagram.
Yeah.
I do not have that app. I am an old man, but I'll get it if I have to.
It's all good. I'll look after it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for that, Claire. That was very good. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a good day /evening/morning, whatever you're doing. And sorry. It's ridiculous. And we'll see you really soon. All right. Goodbye.
Thanks.
Love you. Bye.
Love
kisses.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm getting the last one in this. No, I did last time. All right. Goodbye.